Really? Huh. Okay, there's your answer. Thank you. Stainless steel is the best. Okay. The experts. Oh, okay. 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 Oh. Oh, there you go. That's a good point. There is such a thing as too much iron. Oh, yeah. Oh. Oh, really? The only kind of pot that I knew to avoid if possible is aluminum. You know, that you want to stay away from. Yeah, so. But you know, you're welcome. But you know, if all you had is like a fireplace to cook over it, cast iron would probably be the best thing. You know, it takes the flame pretty well. I remember my grandma, I was born in Romania. I was 10 when my parents came over here. They escaped communism. Anyways, I remember my grandma in Romania, she had an outdoor stove and she used to actually put wood in there and stuff, and on the top she had this big cast iron plate, you know, that was the top of the stove, and a big hole in it, and you could see the flames coming through. And then she had like big cast iron round bottom things that she used to put there and cook right over the open flame. So if you ever find yourself needing to cook over an open flame, make sure you have a cast iron pot. Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you, Sarah.
Okay.
Sarah, can you take
We're going
this
to
with
give
you?
Dr. Brian the chance to put on his microphone. Get ready for
Oh,
that.
yes. Okay.
And so it looks like there are some interesting opinions here about what is best when it comes to this. How many are in favor of cast iron? How about steel? All right, wonderful. Well, I didn't get to taste this because I gave mine away, but guess what? I get to taste it when you're done, aren't you? All right, wonderful.
Okay, I'm on. Yeah. Before we get started on this talk, there's a couple things. We have new cards that you can use to pass out to friends, coworkers, and so forth that have the new information, new email, where to email RSVPs and make the phone call and so forth. So these are nice and generic. We have a whole stack of them at the table. Oh yeah. We really do need the RSVP by Wednesday prior to the second Sunday by 6 o'clock or so we can make sure that we've got the right amount of food. We don't want anyone to go away hungry or anything like that. So it helps us. Pass out. I've got a little handout to pass out, and they're split up, one for each table. And then we have something new this time that I want to go through just real quickly. It dawned on me the other day that we really have had a poor system of feedback from everyone. So I came up with a survey that I'd like everyone to fill out. We're looking for feedback, and what on this survey, and here, let's can pass this out. On this survey, it says up at the top, check wellness survey, and we have the three 1 to 10 ratings, one for the meal, one for the food demo, and one for the health lecture. And it goes between 1 and 10. 1 is awful if you thought the meal was awful. check one. If it was okay, that'd be a 5, anywhere in between. If it was great, 10. Okay. So you've probably filled out 1 to 10 surveys. And so the meal, the food demo, and the health lecture, we just really would like some feedback on it so that we can continue to try and make these better and more helpful. And then below that is a line for writing, for putting... Right. Right. Yeah. Right alongside or something, you know, clarify maybe why it was awful, if you could, so that we can try and fix that in the future. And then down below is a line for suggestions. Now, the suggestions would be any suggestions you might have for meal items, or for the food demos that you would like to see, or something, some kind of health topic lecture that you would want us to research and present. You know, any of those kind of suggestions, or any other suggestions. And then if you're needing more help with things like stopping smoking, or weight management, or would like a vegetarian cooking school or other thing you'd like help with, put that down. And then if you'd like more info, we have programs that we do on what's the connection between health and the Bible and so forth. That's what's the connection, health and the Bible. Personal Bible studies, there's a series that we have called Thunder in the Holy Land, which is kind of a journey through the Holy Land and the teachings of Jesus and so forth. So if you're interested in that, and then if you're wanting more information, more help, your name and address and phone would be helpful so we can get back to you. And so each time we'll have these to get your feedback and help us to improve the material that we're giving, the food we're giving, the various things. Now, any questions on the survey or anything? Does this sound?
Leave it at the table?
Actually, you can, if you want, you can leave it at the table, or you can drop it in the bowl there on the table as you go out. Would be fine. This talk I want to give today, related to how old your heart is, there was the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, came out with a recent study where they were looking at how old people's heart are, not how old you are, but how old your heart is, in America, and they were saying that from the surveys they'd been doing that the average American's heart is like 8 years older than their number of birthdays. And they had a whole survey that you could take to determine your own health age, your own heart age. And that sent me on a little trip of seeing what's out there in the way of what are called cardiovascular risk calculators. Now, your handout, the front side of that handout, is this copy right here. And this is called a Q-Risk 2 2015 risk calculator. And you can see the website that you can go to do your own, run your own risk calculator. And the way this works is that on this side over here is a number of items related to your, like, for instance, your age, male, female, your ethnicity, white, African-American, those kind of things. And then they ask clinical information like smoking, diabetes, and I am sorry, this does not show up as well as I was hoping it would. There's, because we're gonna quickly go through this, and you're gonna see how all of these things fit together. But they look at smoking status, whether you have diabetes, whether you have heart disease in your family, chronic kidney disease, atrial fibrillation, high blood pressure, and then they look at, you put in your cholesterol HDL ratio. Now, Mary can check actually your total cholesterol and the HDL, which is the good cholesterol, and like say your total cholesterol was 200 and your HDL cholesterol was 50. Well, you take 200, divide it by 50, and that would be 4, and that would be what this ratio is. That's what you would put in that ratio. And then the blood pressure, they're looking for the systolic blood pressure, the top number in your blood pressure. And then they're looking to calculate what's called body mass index. And they have you put in your height in centimeters, so you have to convert from feet and inches into centimeters. And then the weight, they want it in kilograms, because body mass index is calculated by taking the number of kilograms of weight and dividing it by your height in meters squared. And this thing, when you put these numbers in, it will calculate it for you automatically. Now, what I did in this situation was I said, I'm going to let's see what the risk is. And this is looking at your risk for having a heart attack or a stroke in the next 10 years. And I put in a 50-year-old white male who didn't smoke, who had no diabetes, no family history, no kidney disease, atrial fibrillation, blood pressure was normal, 120, and he weighed, was 5 feet 10 inches and weighed 165 pounds, which is pretty much standard. The cholesterol HDL ratio of 4 is pretty much kind of an average type of person. And for that, this person, this individual, if you had 100 people with this kind of makeup, 4 of them are roughly 3.8%, roughly 4 out of 100. And this is like 100 individuals. 4, the blue, would be 4 of those 100 would have a heart attack or a stroke over the next 10 years. And you say, well, how do they know this? How do they calculate all of this? And we'll talk about that. So it gives you down here at the bottom a 10-year risk score, 3.8% chance over 10 years. The score of a healthy person, same age, sex, and ethnicity, would be 4%. The relative risk is 1. A relative risk is equal 1, and then they calculate the heart age, healthy heart age here of 50. Now, this is from United Kingdom, where they have a computer system and where they looked at 550 general practices over the United Kingdom with like 10 million patients in this database. And so they, from those 10 million patients, they were able to collect all this kind of information, and they had followed them over many, many years, several decades. And so from that, they could develop this calculator that could calculate your risk. So I thought, well, that's interesting. So I put my numbers in and came up with a risk number. But beyond that, I said, okay, I wonder if you start changing these things, what happens to your risk, your heart age and the risk and so forth? How does this change? And so I began playing around with it and began, it's very fascinating as you do. So what I did was I said, okay, well, what difference does age make in the chance of heart attack or stroke? And if you decrease from 50 to 40, you can barely see that. I decreased it to 40. A 40-year-old male with all of these same numbers, only one out of 100. So that 10-year difference going from 40 to 50, you went from 1 in 100 to about 4 in 100. And if you did the same numbers at age 30, a 30-year-old with these numbers, none of them, between the 30 and 40-year range, none would have a heart attack or stroke. But if you go from 50 to a 60-year-old, if you put in age 60, now 8 out of 100. So it doubled that 10 years in age, doubled the number of people. Exactly.
Under 70 years old, only 8 of them.
Right. If starting with 100 people age 60 with this number, 8 of them would have had a heart attack or stroke by the time they were 70. And that's the effect of age. And then if you say 70, it even more. Between 70 and 80 over a 10-year period, 18 out of 100 were going to have a heart attack or a stroke. So that's the effect of what age does to us. Huh? Oh, I can't. These are actual screenshots of the number. When you go home, you can go to this and put it in. And it will make a difference, female or male, yes. But what I'm trying to show you is what happens when you start changing some of these things and you start putting different things together. So, you go back to a 50-year-old male, 4 out of 100, and then now let's change the smoking status. Just changing from non-smoker to an ex-smoker changes, the risk goes up a little bit to 4.7%, adds 2 years to the heart age, and 21.2 or 20% increase. So there are some people that say that if you go 10 years without smoking, the risk goes back essentially to normal. The United Kingdom says if you've ever smoked, you always have increased risk. But, you know, this is a small increase, 1 to 1.2, 20% increase. You're going to see there's huge changes. Like if we go to a light smoker, that's less than 10 cigarettes a day, that jumps up to 6.4% or 6 out of 100. That's a 60% increase in the chance of a heart attack or stroke over the next 10 years, and the age goes up to 56. So smoking any cigarettes, less than 10 or less, added 6 years to the age of the heart, just in that one thing alone. And then if you go up to moderate, 10 to 20, that raises it a little bit more, 57 and 1.7, almost 7 out of 100. So an extra 3 people out of that 100 would have had a stroke just from moderate smoking. And then heavy smoking goes up to 7.8%. It doubles, the heavy smoker doubles the risk of heart attack or stroke. Now, here's what having diabetes does. This is type 1. That's the juvenile onset diabetes. Just having type 1 diabetes increases the risk to almost 12%, from 4 to 12 out of 100. It triples the risk. That's how devastating diabetes is, particularly type 1 diabetes. It triples the risk of heart attack or stroke, and it raises the heart age to 64, 14 years. So the diabetes really damages the heart. Now, if you go to type 2, which is the most common type of diabetes, the adult onset, it doubles the risk, 2.1, 8 out of 100 instead of 4. Just becoming diabetic doubles the risk. That's why a lot of people, researchers, say as soon as a person develops diabetes, it is as though they have already had a heart attack. As far as their risk for having one, it's the same as if they've already had a heart attack. That's the effect of diabetes. Now, let's go back. Let's see, that was diabetes. Oh, okay, yeah, this is the effect of your genetics, your heredity. This is if you have a family member who's had a heart attack or a stroke less than age 60, first degree relative, that alone raises your risk 50%, 1.1 to 1.5, and adds 5 years to your heart age. So that's the effect of the genetics effect. But you're going to see that is very minimal compared to all the other things that are controllable by us. You know, we can't control who we were born to. But if we go back to, this is everything is normal except the person now has chronic kidney disease. That doubles the risk. Atrial fibrillation, I've got a slide on that, doubles the risk of a heart attack or stroke, mainly stroke. And the reason is that the heart, the pacemaker of the heart is at the top of the heart, and it sends impulses down through these top pumping chambers called the atria, and they contract and force the blood down into the ventricles, and then the ventricles contract, forcing it out to the rest of the body. But in atrial fibrillation, the pacemaker doesn't function normally, and there are all kinds of little pacemakers that develop here in the atria, and instead of contracting, those top ones contracting, they sit there and quiver. And so, because they don't contract, blood clots can form in those top chambers. And then when those blood clots break loose, they travel through the aorta up to the brain, block an artery there, and then a portion of the brain dies from lack of blood flow and oxygen, and that would be a stroke from the blood clot breaking loose. And that's why people with atrial fibrillation, to try and cut that risk down, people are on blood thinners to try and prevent this clot from forming there. So that's one of the risk factors. You know, it's basically the same as if you the risk from having atrial fibrillation is 2.1, which, if you remember, is the same risk for a stroke as if you smoked one or more packs of cigarettes a day. That's the amount of risk there is. Now, if you have high blood pressure, on blood pressure treatment here, on high blood pressure, and you've got the blood pressure controlled, but you have a diagnosis of high blood pressure, that by itself raises the risk 50%, which is the same risk as if you had family history of heart disease. So that alone, even if it's controlled, still raises the risk some. And then rheumatoid arthritis raises the risk about 20%, adds 3 years to the person's heart attack and stroke risk. And the reason is that rheumatoid arthritis is an inflammatory disease in the body, and that inflammation affects the blood vessels as well, which makes them more likely to become clogged with the cholesterol and fat. So that's why rheumatoid arthritis and the other inflammatory diseases can add risk for heart attack and stroke. So those are all the ones, and we're going to look now at we're back to the routine. Now, what about this cholesterol, changing the cholesterol? What does it do? Well, if we're going to go down now, we're going to go from 4 down to 3 down to 2. And when you go down to a ratio of 2, that would be like total cholesterol of 120 and an HDL of 60. Really, really good. That drops the risk for that person about 30%. From 1 down to 0.7, it takes 3 years off their heart age. So that's the effect of dropping cholesterol and improving it. Now, if we start going up, there's 5 and 6, 7, 8. That would be like a total cholesterol of 320 and an HDL of 40. Really high cholesterol, 320. That increases the heart attack risk, stroke risk by 80% up to 1.8. And one pack of cigarettes a day is 2. So not quite the same effect as smoking one pack of cigarettes a day. It adds 7 years onto the heart age. Now, so that roughly 7 people out of 100. Now, if you go back to the regular and we start changing the blood pressure. Now we took the blood pressure from 120 down to 100. And we went from the standard person that we started with had 4 out of 100. If you decrease the blood pressure from 120 down to 100, it drops to 3 in 100. And you save 2 years on your heart age, drops to 48. If you drop the blood pressure to 90, it's about the same. Drop the blood pressure down to 70, your top number on the blood pressure to 70, and that drops the risk to about 2.5%, about 40% decrease. And so, you know, some people say, well, you know, I've got my normal blood pressure is 80 over 60. Well, this is saying that's actually good. That's actually better than 120 over 80. That as long as you're not passing out or feeling dizzy when you stand up, 80 over 60, if you feel perfectly fine, that's actually helping your heart. It's adding 4 years to your heart age.
Doesn't your height have something to do with that?
The height? Well, you know, if you were a giraffe, maybe, and you, but, so, okay, and then if you add to that a blood pressure of 70 systolic and the cholesterol ratio really, really good, down to 2. So you really control your blood pressure, your cholesterol and your blood pressure. Everything else is good. That's the lowest risk you can get. There it drops to about 2 instead of 4 out of 100. It cuts in half the risk, and the heart age drops from 50 to 43. So that's the best you can do. Now we're going to start going back, and we're going to go the other way. Now we're going to see what effect our weight has with this risk. We're going to take the person from 165 and add about 50-some pounds to 209. That increases their BMI up to roughly 30. 20 to 25 is considered normal or good. 25 to 30 is overweight. 30 and above is obese. So raising, going up to the 30 range, which is right getting into obese, that really, that adds 1 year to his heart age and doesn't really change that much. So if you start going up on the weight to to a BMI of 35, definitely in the obese range, weighs 246 now, it increased from 1 to 1.1, 10% increase, and still about 4 out of 100. If it goes up to 280 pounds, it adds another year. It's up to 52 on the heart age, still 1.1, and the risk is 4.5%. So you can see from their data, the weight by itself is not adding that much. But usually what comes along with that weight are changes in blood pressure, diabetes, a lot of other things that comes with that added weight. And that's where this is going to be coming in. So we're going to go back to the standard person. And what we're going to do now is we're going to say, and let's combine, let's say that the person's an ex-smoker and he has type 2 diabetes. Being, and everything else is the same, just being an ex-smoker and combining it with type 2 diabetes, the risk goes up to 10 out of 100, 10% risk, 2.5 times. This is quite a bit more than just than smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. So just from adding that two together, if you take that person and you make them a light smoker and type 2 diabetes, they go up to 13.7. The moderate smoker goes up to 14.8%, and a heavy smoker who's also got type 2 diabetes, 16.5, 4 times the rate of heart attack or stroke. 16%, that means that that person has a 1 in 6. So in other words, 1 out of every 6 people in the next 10 years with this setting, smoking and diabetes, 1 out of 6 are going to have a heart attack or stroke. Now, if you add in, now, if you say it's a smoker that has a family history, now that triples the risk, and greater than 1 out of 10 risk. If you say they're a heavy smoker and they have chronic kidney disease, that's 4 times the risk, and now their heart age is clear up to 68. It's added 18 years to their heart age to have heavy smoking and chronic kidney disease. Atrial fibrillation, let's see, we've already looked at. If you have a heavy smoker and atrial fibrillation, that's 4 times the risk. 1 in 6 people will have a heart attack or stroke. Now we're going to change the blood pressure. Heavy smoker more than one pack a day, who is on blood pressure treatment, has high blood pressure, but his blood pressure is still 140. It's not being well controlled. That combination, 3.5 times the risk. They're heart age 66. They've added 16 years. And then if you take their blood pressure up to 160, it's 4 times the risk. They're 68. 100, there's a blood pressure of 160. There's a blood pressure of 160, and their cholesterol is high, and they smoke. Now your risk goes up to 22% chance. That's 1 in 5 chance of having a heart attack or stroke. So you begin to see what happens when you start adding these things together. The risk just goes through the ceiling. If you increase the weight to a BMI of 30, that's a 1 in 4 chance, 24%, 1 in 4 chance. If you have the overweight, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, heavy smoker, there's 36% chance, 1 in 3 chance. The heart age, 82. They've added 32 years to their heart. Then if you throw in type 2 diabetes, heavy smoker, type 2 diabetes, they have a family history, they have high blood pressure that's not well controlled, they have high cholesterol. I see this all the time. This is not unusual combination. This is people out there every day, and they're overweight. Go to FERS. Watch the people going through FERS. Most of the people going, I shouldn't pick on FERS, but anyway, they have a greater chance of having a heart attack or a stroke than not, 64%. And they're greater than 84 heart age. And so they're heavy smoker, diabetes, family history, chronic kidney disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and they're overweight, 88.9% chance of heart attack or stroke. And then they also have atrial fibrillation, and then if you throw everything in, if they're smoking, they have diabetes, family history, chronic kidney disease, atrial fibrillation, high blood pressure, rheumatoid arthritis, which there are people out there that have all of these things. There's no wonder that they have a heart attack or a stroke, okay? You add all these things together, that's when we start really. And they're all, a lot of these are all interrelated in regards to the lifestyle. Now, if you start, let's say that they stop smoking. Well, it gives them a slight chance, a 4 in 100 chance of not having a heart attack or a stroke. If they control the blood pressure, then it gives them a little more chance of not having a heart attack or stroke. If they get their cholesterol down and under control, it increases the chance. Now they've got a 1 in 4 chance of not having a heart attack or a stroke. If they, let's say they control the atrial fibrillation, thin the blood out so they don't have blood clots, then that gives them a 1 in 2 chance of not having a heart attack or stroke. If they control the diabetes to the point where they are normalized, and you can do that, now the risk has dropped from 100% to about 25. So that means they have a 3 out of 4 chance of not having a heart attack or stroke. So this is where doing all of these types of improvements can help. So see how all of these things relate together to increase the chance of a heart attack and stroke? And that's why these two books, this one and the next one, can help people to be able to deal with all of these various things that lead to heart attack and stroke. This is the best book I have ever seen on saying goodbye to diabetes. Dr. Wes Youngberg wrote this book a couple of years ago, and it's on how to prevent or reverse diabetes. You can get it on Amazon. Excellent book, well written, shows you very well how to reverse diabetes if somebody has diabetes. And then the other book that we've talked about and we've been starting on a trip through is Proof Positive. He goes through in great detail all of these various risk factors and how to bring them back to normal and what it is that's making them go high, out of control, and how to control them. So the Proof Positive is another excellent book. So what questions do you have from what I showed you here? You can go home, go online, pull that up. You can put your own numbers in there. That's why we do the blood pressures, we do the cholesterol and HDL, we do blood sugars, Mary does, so that you can get those numbers, plug them in, and you can see yourself, where am I at? What are my risks? What can I do to improve things? And you can play around with the calculator and say, okay, my blood pressure is at this amount. If I work on it and get my blood pressure down to this point, what's it do to my risk? And it's very simple to play around with that and see what you can do yourself to improve the chance of not having a heart attack and stroke. Good. Well, thank you. Yeah, our goal is so that you can not be one of the statistics, and it is possible. Just takes a game plan, like you say, and saying, where can I change? How can I change for the better? So, all right. Well, very good. We've got cards there at the back. I think we have a drawing, right? Yeah, we have a drawing. And we'll be back next month. We have some items that left over that people can pick up for a small nominal fee.
And don't forget to turn in your survey at the end.
Yeah.
Either leave it at the table or bring it to the bowl back there.
Okay, here we go. Last three numbers, 395. 395. Who has 395? Bill. All right, Bill. Last one here, 387. Okay. All right. Congratulations. I don't know if Bill has a... Which?
I've got those addresses.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
We'll give you that one, Bill. Well, take it and give it to somebody.
I will.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for attending Check Wellness this time, and we are just spread the word, and we look forward to see you again in 1 month.
Yeah, take a postcard, take a card or two, and invite somebody else for next month. All right, take care.